From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 7th day of June, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Ed Usett will join us from University of Minnesota Extension to discuss his view of the commodity markets. And we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too, ever important this week in the marketplace. That with Mark Russo at Everstream Analytics in Chicago. And it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn today settled at $6.79 and a quarter. It was down 3.5 cents. September up 14.5 at 6.21, and December corn at 6.02 and 3 quarters, 11.25 cents higher. July soybeans on both sides of the market 23.5 cents lower at the end of the day, settled at $15.60 and a quarter, but it was as high as 16.23 and a half of the day. The low there at 15.58 and a half. The November contract at $14.40, up 4.5 cents. As we finished out a Monday afternoon, the bean oil 51 cents lower, and the bean meal for the day down $9.30. July wheat 7.75 lower at $6.80, and the soft red, the hard red at $6.30, down 6.5, and the spring 27.5 lower at $7.85 and a quarter. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $117.77 and a half, down 30 in the lead August. Feeders 27.5 higher at $150.20, and lean hogs for the July at $122.10, $1.50 lower for the day. Crude oil $69.19 a barrel, 44 cents lower. Diesel fuel down around 0.2 cents to $2.11 and 7 cents, and the gasoline on the RBOB at $2.19 and 3 cents. That's a penny and 7 tenths of a cent lower for the afternoon. Here to take a look at some of these numbers, try to figure out just exactly what happened in Chicago, is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Wild day. I mean, we've had some wild days in Chicago, but this one was really interesting from the gap open higher overnight to the close. Can you tell me about it, please, especially for the soybeans?
Oh, boy, July beans. I mean, almost a 70-cent trading range. That's just plain nuts in the July. Those Novembers had a little over 40 cent trading range, but no, a huge gap and go. Anybody watching the weather, especially the Dakotas, 108 degrees, 111 degrees, and you know, just shriveling up, and that gave the fundamental fuel to giddy up and go there right away. On the July's, made a new high on the move, closed a little lower, so it's going to be important to hold last week's lows in those July's. November, made new contract highs, came back and high, kind of stayed above last week's highs there. Didn't leave a whole lot of a gap to work with there, but if we can kind of hold in through here on those, maybe we can see a little bit of a recovery bounce on that. But the momentum indicators overbought, ready to roll over to the downside after that higher trade and lower close. July corn, not as dramatic and so forth. I mean, it had a large range, but made a new high for the move. Did not take out the high a couple of weeks ago, but it reversed down, closing 3.5 cents lower. The December corn chart's the one to look at. Basically, we gapped higher there. Last week's high was 592 and 3 quarters. Today's low was 97 and a half, so we still have open chart gap there, so we'll watch technically, see if that comes in and gets filled or not. The longer that gap stays open, the better for the bulls, but we don't want to gap lower and leave a one-day island top. So there's a lot of moving parts in through here to watch technically on these charts and so forth. But we've had a good run. We're going to see some extreme volatility. We got a bunch of commodity funds trading the market that, they just watch the green line and the red line. And with the fundamental news on top of that, it's going to create some big moves. Thing you'll notice is red in front. Old crop corn down 3, new crop corn up 11, old crop beans down 23, new crop up They've been unwinding the bull spread for a few days here. Today really showed it. Also, too, these commodity funds are unlike what I am. If I'm long a contract and deliveries approach, and I wait till the very last day to get out, but they get out ahead of time. And so we're seeing some movement here out of the July into the deferred contracts. And ideas are they should have that cleaned up here within the next week and a half. For the most part, on that. But the weather, hot and dry, sent it up in the midday. Shorter-term weather models came in and actually showed a half to 1.5 inches for the northern part of Dakotas into Canada, maybe northern Minnesota. Not Dakotas or Iowa or Minnesota for the most part. Was going to be a little bit shortchanged, but there's a chance of some decent pop-up rain activity, and that kind of took the edge off here as we went through midday. See what the news is from here on out, other than weather, would be conditions. This afternoon, we're seeing good to excellent category for corn. Average trade guess is 74% good to excellent versus 76% good to excellent last week. They got a range of 72% to 75%. Of course, the Dakotas, the Western Belt will struggle. Here in the East, it doesn't look that bad. It looks pretty good. You know, we get some showers and stuff. We're pretty good shape for the most part. Beans, we should see the first good to excellent reading. 70% good to excellent. There's a wide range of 64% to 75%, so we'll probably be in the middle there. We did not have a reading there last week. Then wheat conditions, regular wheat, 48% good to excellent versus 48% last week. That spring wheat probably will suffer the most there, so we'll see what type of spring wheat reading we see here this afternoon. Is that a big market maker? Probably not. The weather maps are kind of in charge. Then the trade will also continue to focus on what type of numbers we'll see Thursday morning with a brand new monthly supply and demand estimate there, Todd.
Yeah, so the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates are due out at 11 o'clock a.m. Central Time. You can find those on our website at willag.org. You mentioned that we were unwinding the spreads. Old crop, new crop. Old crop dropping sharply. New crop holding on or even making some gains, both corn and soybeans. Expectations that this will continue as we move into that Thursday report?
Short term, even though we've got tighter old crop supplies, when you kind of listen to who's doing what, the end user's fairly well covered through the month of July here. So, you know, if we see old crop kind of take charge, it might be towards the end of June here on some renewed bull spreading once the funds get out, or some pop-up demand here as we move into first part of August. But, you know, even though you have zero inventory left over, if everybody's got bought what they need bought, there's no real need to chase the market or own old crop for the most part. And, of course, the unknown is new crop. You know, that's where the risk on, risk off is as a producer. The strength inheres opportunities to get caught up on sales, lock in some higher values compared to what we saw 6 months ago. Then, too, as an end user, you know, breaks in here, you'll see them come forward and gather a little inventory to try to get some stuff on the books here because China's pretty well bought up quite a bit of this stuff, and the export market's expected to stay fairly strong. Then, too, with the strong crush for bean oil and also ethanol, we're kind of playing keep away from each other in through here. So there's a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of moving parts in through here, and we're going to continue to see some very volatile, wide trading swings.
Well, we'll have you to keep us up to date. Thanks so much today. I appreciate that.
Very good. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. And don't forget to visit our website. The address there is willag.org, willag.org. If you scroll to the bottom of the page, you'll find links for podcast applications like Stitcher and SoundCloud, NPR One, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify too. And you can just click on those. Click on the favorite one or the one you're using on your device at the moment. You should find the closing market report. It's quick, it's simple, and it's really easy to do. And a great way to listen to us on demand. Of course, you can always just do that off our website. Click and play at willag.org. And you'll also find on that webpage some information from the agricultural economist, crop scientist, and animal scientist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. In today's agricultural news, we'll start off with last week's ransomware attacks on JBS that shut down many of their plants. According to one pork industry consultant, the livestock sector needs to be better prepared. Cyber extortion is on the increase as attackers make off with millions. And National Pork Producers Economic Consultant Steve Meyer says the industry must be ready.
I would think we would be a very attractive target for these kind of attacks. And I think it just underscores the importance of companies being prepared for them and having security systems in place.
It's not clear if JBS paid a ransom to the Russian-linked groups that the FBI now blames for the attack, while the hackers of the Colonial Pipeline walked off with some $4.4 million. It's a big deal, especially in a business with such a non-storable product as the pandemic showed and such tight profit margins. Meyer talks about the bottom line for consumers and the industry.
Consumers end up paying all costs, whether those costs are taxes or ransomware or whatever. Consumers have to pay them all, and so we have a responsibility to our customers to do a good job on this.
Steve Meyer says the attacks are likely to continue, even increase, and will be a problem for all sectors, especially livestock. On that note, Michael Schmidt, who is a co-owner of Torrington Livestock in Torrington, Wyoming, says since the COVID pandemic and supply issues, the cyber attack is another wake-up call to break the beef processing monopolies like JBS.
We're way too susceptible to this. More packers would make it a better situation, be harder to target the packer if we had more of them. But we've got to make that economically driven. As a consumer, we've got to, when you have a new person come on, you've got to support them.
Jonathan Holodeck, who's the policy director for the Center for Rural Affairs, agrees and says this time it was only a temporary disruption, but it could be more.
This does underscore just how reliant we are on big processors like JBS. Again, that's 1/4 of all processing capacity in the United States is JBS. That was taken offline. And if that is 25% of your options, you're in a tough spot. And so I think this really underscores how important it is to find alternatives.
In a statement late Wednesday, AP said the FBI attributed the attack on JBS to R Evil, a Russian-speaking gang that has made some of the largest ransomware demands on record. One final note on this issue. A USDA estimate showed about a 20% decline in cattle slaughter after JBS USA beef plants went down, nearly the same as the firm's U.S. beef market share. And that was just a 2 or 3 day interruption. That's a look at today's Ag News. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Ed Ussett, agricultural economist and market specialist for University of Minnesota Extension. Thank you, Ed, for being with us today. On a Monday, you've been watching some interesting trade in Chicago. Why don't you start with the swings, please?
Well, today we've had some wild swings. And I got to tell you, Todd, I wish I was tuned in to the latest weather reports, and as many professional traders are, but there's something going on, and I'm guessing it's a changing weather report. That's typically what would drive this. Let me give you an example. Corn, July corn's already in the middle of a 25-cent swing today. It's been over $7 a bushel, 705, 706. Got as low as 682, and I'm looking now, we're close to that low, 685, 686. Here's the funny part. I looked at the markets. The corn swing is the small one. Soybeans, July soybeans have been on a 42-cent swing today. At one point, as high as getting close to 16 and a quarter, but as low as 15.85, and hanging around right now, just a couple cents off that low. That to me screams something came out in the weather report that said, nah, it might not be as bad as we thought. And soybeans aren't the big mover. Spring wheat, I'll bet your listeners, Todd, don't think about spring wheat too much. That's been on a 60-cent swing today, as high as $8.44, as low as $7.84, and currently hanging around the $8 mark. Nearly as big a swing in September, new crop wheat, as high as $8.46 and under, it's a 56-cent swing, excuse me, as low as $7.90, both of them hanging around $8 a bushel. So these markets started strong out of the chute, out of the gate, very high, backed off very quickly, and now we're trading sort of towards the lows, not on the lows, but towards them. And that screams something changed in the forecast.
So on the soybean side, why do you suppose soybeans reacted so substantially to maybe a change in the weather forecast, which has been hot and dry?
Well, this hot and dry, the concern we have in the with this crop is really not about the Eastern Corn Belt. It's not about Illinois. I think things are going pretty doggone good in the Eastern Corn Belt. We're talking about parts of Iowa. That's a concern. Parts of Minnesota and a big chunk of North Dakota. And North Dakota has emerged as a major player in the soybean market. I want to say they're number four in planted acres for soybeans and have been for several years. And, hot and dry and drought conditions in North Dakota mean something, not only to spring wheat, which is traditionally grown up there, but also to soybeans and corn.
What are you thinking about as it relates to marketing new crop?
Well, I think it's time to have your mailbox out and maybe chant a mantra of some sort to stay calm. I think I'm still looking at opportunities to price new crop. You want to price it. Don't jump in with both feet on one shot. Do a little bit at a time. Aim for a good average price. And if it's just too much for you, you've got to deal with options type strategies. And just this morning, I was looking at new crop corn options. They're going to knock you back 10% of the value of the corn. In other words, I was looking at a $6 December put, and the December contract was trading 608, 609, 65 cents a bushel. That's more than 10% of the value of the underlying contract. That's what happens when things get volatile. I'm imagining the same thing is going on in soybeans, that it's going to cost you, the premiums will be roughly 10% of the underlying new crop contract. That's a steep price to pay, and yet if it helps you sleep at night, you look at that.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome. Stay cool.
I'll try. That's Ed Essent. He's an ag marketing specialist with University of Minnesota Extension. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Mark Russo is here from Everstream Analytics. Thank you, Mark, for being with us. It sounds to me during the trade today that something changed, and more likely than not, it's the weather. Can you kind of give me an update of where we are across the Corn Belt?
Sure. We have increased the threat level in the western Midwest corn and soybean belt due to a continuation of well below normal rainfall coming up, along with warmer than normal temperatures. And this is being, you know, driven by this ridging of high pressure, which is becoming more centered over the north central U.S. Now, you know, previously, it's really the kind of the epicenter of the heat and dryness has been in more of the northern plains and also at times in the Pacific Northwest. But that is at least now beginning to expand a bit and include the western Midwest. And so we've already in recent weeks begun to see a decrease in soil moisture reserves across that zone. And at least that looks to accelerate given the pattern here over the next couple of weeks. And again, this is just Western Belt, obviously, extremely high producing acreage, but it's not the entire Midwest. Eastern Midwest is in good shape, or should continue to be in good shape with rain and actually cooler temperatures in places such as, you know, much of Illinois, especially Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio.
Can you give me a kind of a geographic look at what those driest areas over the next couple of weeks might be? I think when I was talking about them last week, late in the week, it was north of Interstate 80 and running all the way into the northwestern part of Illinois and picking up parts of Wisconsin, Minnesota, and such. Is that kind of the place, or is it further to the west and to the north?
Generally speaking, they're in and around I-80 and points to the north and northwest. So northwest Illinois, northern Missouri, you know, basically all of Iowa, southern Minnesota, and into the eastern Dakotas, and even eastern Nebraska. That zone will be the driest basis normal from now through, you know, basically June the 20th.
What happens after that?
Oh, good question, Todd. Right now, there's really no indications that we're seeing any strong signals of any kind of big change in the pattern here, at least throughout, you know, much of this month.
I know it's tough with that much lead time. What are the things that you watch in order to predict if there will be a change in the pattern?
Yeah, some of the features that we monitor for changes include trends in sea surface temperatures, especially off the west coast of North America, and even down into the equatorial Pacific. Some of that is, you know, in the El Nino La Nina region of the equatorial Pacific. But one of the more important areas that we watch is actually the North Pacific and for any changes there. And then also we look at what we call tropical forcing, or these larger scale areas or waves in the atmosphere that can actually force jet stream patterns by way of thunderstorm activity in the tropics, aligned across the tropics. And we're just not seeing any, you know, signals there that points to a, you know, forcing of the pattern or forcing of a change, at least in the short term.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. He joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.